This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of Washington Management Group, which was recently purchased, I guess in April, purchased by Dell Tech. Bill, thanks for being on the show today.
Roger, it's always great to be here, and I'm looking forward to some of these tough questions you're going to be asking me here.
Yeah, well, my first question, I mean, of personal interest is the last time you were on the show, I think it was back in January or February.
Oh, that's right.
You had to rush off to the hospital because your daughter was about to deliver a grandchild. How did that all turn out?
Aisley Grace Hollihan is doing very well, 6 months, and we just saw her this past weekend. So, yeah, everything went well. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you inquiring about that.
Well, I just recall that that show was kind of a lot of fun. We had some fun with that, but congratulations on your granddaughter and I guess many more. Well, today on the show, Bill, we want to talk a little bit about we're in the last quarter of the fiscal year, and I think this year is a little bit different than previous years. I mean, it's always, you know, a difficult time or a challenging time, maybe is a better word, for government agencies as they're trying to, effectively and efficiently, obligate funds for products and service, needed products and services before the end of fiscal year. But this year, I think, is even a little different, even more compressed. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, Roger. I think the each year with the size of the government government as a whole and getting a budget passed seems to be getting, normally when you do things that you know are going to be reoccurring, you sort of get better at it. In the case of the budget for the federal government, I think as taxpayers and citizens and as business people, I think everybody's touched by, the delays in the continuing resolution in this past year or this current year, delays, went into April, as we all know, and I think there was actually 8 continuing resolutions. What ended up happening here is from a contracting standpoint is we read a lot about the acquisition workforce, and this administration and Congress have had a lot of hearings on the quality of the acquisition workforce, how can it be improved. And I think the disappointing part is I think we need to really put as much attention on that as improving the budget process, because what happens, and I answer your question, is on this continuing resolution, the unique part this year is it's really going to be a congested acquisition lane as we're in the fourth quarter.
Right. It's late. And it's late. It's like somebody's 2 weeks overdue. Like, right. That's really painful, right?
That's right. So
get back to the birth sort
that's
of
right. Yeah,
analogy.
We'll bring that up occasionally, I guess. But on this though, the agencies have these procurement acquisition lead times called PULTs. And the procurement people do that to tell their customers when's the latest they can actually have new requirements coming for the fiscal year. And it's, as I said, with the delay of the continuing resolution has delayed a lot of reoccurring requirements from being bought earlier in the year, as well as with new programs that have been on standby waiting for the funding to come through. So we're going to be faced with a lot of decisions that are going to be coming to a head here over the next few weeks. I think one of the things that I don't know if you've announced it yet, but I heard it was talked about. I guess you're going to be doing doing an event or something next month to talk about this, I think, with GSA.
Yes. August 2nd, the Coalition for Government Procurement is going to have a breakfast event where we will be, and it's at the Tyson's Marriott. And we'll start in about 8:30. I'll give some of the details. 8:30 in the morning, it'll be a breakfast event. We will be having Steve Kemp as a featured speaker, and we're going to have a panel discussion of, you know, the tools that are available for the acquisition workforce, you know, in this compressed buying cycle, you know, extremely compressed buying cycle. I think it's somewhat unprecedented in terms of the delays and the approval of the overall budget. As you rightly pointed out, you know, standard recurring requirements that people would buy for going into the next year, you know, have been put on hold until the money is available. And now, you know, it's like the floodgates opening up in terms of the funding. So look for that event. There'll be announcements of it periodically throughout the rest of this month, but it should be a good event. GSA is going to talk about the tools it has in place to assist agencies effectively and efficiently acquire the goods and services that they need to meet their mission requirements. So, and Bill, you know, and speaking of that, just from your perspective, you're looking at it from an industry perspective, what are some of the key tools that contractors should think about having in place to be able to respond to, you know, this compressed buying cycle?
Well, a couple of things. One, from an HR standpoint, you know, the sales team, your BD team, from a BD standpoint, you're not, business development standpoint, you're not going to probably be able to pick up a lot of new business between now and the end of September. Yeah, but from a strategic standpoint, you have to keep that part of the activity involved with their customer base, agencies and departments. So that's going to continue on. But I am seeing and talking to a lot of folks, and, you know, seeing from discussions I'm having with folks that there are, you know, leaning back as far as, you know, what, you know, how many deals are people going to go for? Because there's a price to putting a proposal together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully during this session here, I'm not quite sure if you're counting on that. We can get into what a duplicate contract really means to everybody. If we have time, I'd like to kind of share that with you. But in regards to further the rest of this quarter, you know, people are going to have to know where their customers' needs are. They should have already lined up contracts to make it easy buying vehicles for their existing customers. And always, you know, I'm a big fan of the blanket purchase agreements. People have different opinion on those, regardless of the administration. But the part I love is when any administration wants to try and do something new in government from an acquisition standpoint, they always fall back on the blanket purchase agreement to execute on that, and they've had successes every time. So
we know now strategic sourcing, you know, the whole acquisition strategy for that is to use BPAs off the GSA schedules.
Exactly.
To your point,
yeah.
So
exactly.
Well, with regard to do you see? I guess you see sort of multiple award contracts, BPAs, GSA schedules as the channels that agencies will likely be using.
Yeah, I think as we get closer to the end of the year, a lot more people are going to be looking to the GSA for established sources of supply, and I think this is sets up a good opportunity for GSA. To demonstrate the capability of all the contract vehicles that they have in place. And so this does align itself. Unfortunately, this the craziness about the end of year buying in this case, a little more unusual than earlier years because of the compressed time. GSA is in a really good position to demonstrate its value to government and to the taxpayer.
Yeah, well, thinking about GSA also has assisted services that it provides. Do you think that, they'll be, you know, and there's also the Acquisition Services Directorate at Department of Interior, and I just know that agencies across the government do, you know, assist each other via the Economy Act. Do you see a lot of that kind of stuff going on this quarter?
Well, it should be that. That's why they're in place. I have not seen a lot of marketing and advertising like we used to see, 4 or 5 years ago, where they would just blitz, every part of media. But I think it would be of I think there's still time. So I think those organizations, depending on where they are from a staffing standpoint, should really be doing some good outreaching to their customer bases, letting them know what's available, and being able to assist them too. Because you know it's important that you know, some people will look at this. Well, if the government doesn't award the contracts, they'll save money. Well, a lot of what the requirements are just run the fundamentals of government. So there has to be a base of government needs that have to be met day in and day out. And so there's part of that. So the fact that some people may say, well, if the government doesn't spend, they're going to save money. And in a lot of cases, unfortunately, not spending the money on certain aspects of the
can end up costing the money, exactly. Costing more money in
exactly.
the long run, actually,
exactly.
for government.
Bill, right now
we do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Bill Gormley, and we'll be talking a little bit about one of Bill's favorite topics, strategic sourcing, and where it's headed. In the current administration. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Every day, men and women across America try to make the transition from wearing the uniform of our armed services to wearing the varied attire of the private sector or civil service workforce. The Coalition for Government Procurement tries to make that transition easier through its Wounded Veteran Training Program Fund, bringing employers and nonprofit organizations together with one united goal, putting veterans to work. There is no nobler task. Each year, the Coalition presents a golf tournament to bring employers together with organizations dedicated to placing vets in the workforce through cooperative efforts. This year, the Coalition's tournament is August 31st at Whiskey Creek Golf Course. Please consider joining the Coalition, its membership, and others for a fun day of golf, all for a great cause. For more information on playing or sponsoring this worthwhile event, visit thecgp.org or call Roger Waldron at 202-331-0975. That's August 31st at Whiskey Creek Golf Course. See you there.
Here's Brian McGrath, CIO, Census Bureau, on the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix.
I see us in 3 to 5 years having 70 to 80% of our compute resources virtualized. I see us having a desktop environment that is completely virtualized and allows us to provide those services any place, anywhere.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The benefits of virtualization are clear. Use less energy, generate less heat, take up less space. But before making the leap, make sure you're leveraging your existing Microsoft investment. You may already own key virtualization products like Remote Desktop Services, System Center, and Windows Server 2008 R2 with Hyper-V. These products put you well on your way to a well-managed, virtualized application, desktop, and server environment, moving toward the cloud. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Engineers have come up with a new way to deliver cancer-fighting medicines. They're disguising them as red blood cells. Sending drugs into the body to fight cancer is truly like a combat mission. If detected, the immune system destroys the medicines in minutes. But if they can
stay longer in the system, they will have a longer time to circulate in the bloodstream to find the diseased cells or the tumor size.
Liangfeng Zheng, a University of California San Diego engineer, says a good camouflage helps. So he's wrapping tiny drugs, called nanoparticles, with a red blood cell membrane cloak, either from matching blood bank types or better.
You can actually collect the blood from the patient himself, and then you use these blood cells to make the nanoparticles.
Such disguised drugs lasted in mice for almost 2 days. More at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time, but the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Jennifer Duplessis, a member of the Kearney team at George Mason Mortgage. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Bill Gormley. We've been talking about the end of fiscal year, the last quarter, and the compressed buying cycle that we're facing both in government and industry. And we'll talk a little bit about strategic sourcing in a moment. But first, Bill, do you have any other thoughts that you really wanted to get across with regard to the end of the fiscal year and the compressed buying cycle that we see this year?
Yeah, I think one question right before we in the earlier session here was on assisted services. Roger, you bring up a good point. And some agencies or some folks in government, look at assisted services and look at the surcharge that they lay on top of what they on what the acquisition cost is. And I think sometimes we focus too much on that. I mean, it always has to be looked at. But I think at the end of the day, there is a value that those folks are bringing. And it's important to know that they're not running off appropriated funds in many cases. So I think the assisted services, the cost of assisted services, I think is way overplayed as far as folks who are not in favor of that. But you have to cover their costs, and at least the government, to me, is making a good attempt to do that here, which is a little different than appropriated. So I'm kind of get off my bandwagon on that. But the other thing is...
One thing about this, to finish that thought, I mean, it's really not, the assisted services is really designed as a service, and it's designed to recoup its costs and assist the agencies, because it is really fundamentally still one government, as much as the agencies tend to may have a different view of that in certain cases. Yeah. But.
And then the other area, I know in government, we use a lot of acronyms, but PALT, P-A-L-T, procurement acquisition lead times. I would suggest from an industry standpoint that the folks that are interfacing with government agencies should be aware of what the procurement acquisition lead times are for their agency specifically. And they'll put information out as to what dates that the contracting folks can no longer take on requirements. So those dates are starting to, throughout government, each agency or department, they're all pretty similar because there's only so many days left to the end of the year.
Sure,
for
yep.
sure. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be important for industry to pay attention to what those PALT times are, and was particularly when they're working with a program inside an agency, to get those requirements sent to procurement, their procurement office, before the deadline, so that work can get in and get processed through acquisition before the end of the year.
Yeah, and just thinking that, I thought about something. What do you think of eBuy and the role it's going to play? eBuy is GSA's electronic RFQ tool that people use to compete orders off the schedules.
Yeah, I mean, I think that clearly is a quick way for the government to communicate its needs to schedule contract holders, and then goes to some GWAC now. So I think it's a great way of getting it out there. Competition, I think, is as we always know, is important. I think sometimes we put our blinders on when we talk about competition. Maybe we can have a whole other session on competition.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Really,
I got my blinders off. What do you think, Bill?
Anyway, I think the government, even when I was in it for 32 years, we focus too much on competition. I think we overplay competition. We overplay the pricing side. I think the government at some point, and it's not easy, and I will admit it, should look at total cost ownership. And, you know, we could, the taxpayer or the government, I'll put my old former hat on, you know, we could spend an enormous amount of time, which is a cost of government, as well as other resources to feel that we got the best deal or lowest price. And I always, when I was in government, I always kind of faulted that type of action, because we have to get a lot of work done, and nobody ever is going to get the best price on any one thing. The market changes, and so it's a matter of how evaluations are set up for evaluation criteria, and then it reduces the cost internally to government when those criteria are known, as well as industry, and the government then does get a good deal.
Right, it's about getting a good deal. You're absolutely about right about one thing, is like there, you can never guarantee to get the lowest price on anything. That's not just the market; just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And to the extent the idea of like this, the resources and the time spent on focusing on trying to ensure you get the lowest possible price, it's like. There's always a lower price. It's just the way, or a different set, a different deal. Right. I mean, fundamentally.
Exactly.
So.
I mean, there's a different way to influence the.
Well, speaking of that, it's a great transition to strategic sourcing. And I know this administration, as previous administrations, has been very focused on trying to save taxpayer money through use of strategic sourcing, with a lot of focus on getting low price or reducing costs. Just from your general sense, how do you think it's going currently?
Well, I think if we take strategic sources within a field of the acquisition, Roger, I mean, it's a valid part of acquisition that any administration, and even from a commercial standpoint, everybody should follow. It's just, buying smart is the way I look at that. And when we get into the strategic side, I think the government is so diversified. And I think large corporations, also when you get into the international corporations, they will go with more than one source. The government recognizes that, and I know they've done the office supplies, and they've done that. I think this is two times that they've done that, done office supplies. But I think clearly they're focusing way too much on what the actual price is versus what the total cost of running that program and what values they're getting out of it.
So how would you? I mean, if you were gonna do it, let's put your hat on and you were running that. What changes would you make? I'm putting you on the spot, Bill.
That's good. I like it. As long as nobody can throw anything at me.
Okay.
Here we go. All right. Here we go. As far as the current strategic sourcing program, Roger, in this administration is. Basically no different than it was in the previous administration. So I think that's an important part. There's no political lines here. It's an objective. And so the objectives are the same, save money. I think we all get that. The problem that I have, and based on how government operates, that's not a criticism. It's just every agency and department have their own culture. And I think the GSA has set up multiple BPAs for agencies to use, which gives them choice. I think to really maximize strategic sourcing, I think an emphasis should be placed on each agency or department doing their own BPA that's tailored more specifically to their culture and to their needs. And yes, that would mean more BPAs, but I also think that that the volume is significant enough. You can't have your requirement volume continue to rise and think at every increase in quantity that you're going to get a better deal. There does reach a point in time where industry can no longer give you a better deal, and I think each agency would cover that quantity very easily, or that dollar amount, Roger.
Yeah. So how would that work? Would you if agencies were doing their own BPAs off schedule, and they then turn around? Create measures of what they've achieved in terms of overall savings or cost reductions or,
Yeah, I think having each agency and run their own program, first off, you get buy-in Second, right now, the administration, even the previous administration, they have people who will want to say they want to use the BPAs, but in some cases don't. So there's no guaranteed minimum. So when agencies are doing their own BPA, they should put a guaranteed minimum in there because they're going to use it. And I think then that then forces them from a financial standpoint. They're committed that that will in the overall. Will be a cost savings to the taxpayer, and they'll have the data collected from that. And under an ideal situation, Roger, you know, let's say that every agency department does a BPA and office supplies as an example. Go through a cycle like that, and maybe you'll get some better spend data to see does it make sense to change it at that point.
Right. Okay. So, and also, I think, I mean, the idea of an agency specific one, even that fact itself creates an appearance, you know, you talk about guaranteed minimum, that agency's put its name on it saying it's going to use that. You know, the one concern I have about the government-wide BPAs is that they're sort of, I don't know what the right word is here, but I'm searching for, but it's sort of generic, and it's almost like, where is the commitment? Fundamentally.
Yeah, I mean, there's no fingerprints, there's no DNA associated with the agency in that BPA. There's no ownership. And so, you know, GSA owns it, which is appropriate. But I think to get what the administration is looking for, I think each agency and department should be doing their own.
Okay. Well, right now, Bill, we have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Bill Gormley, and we'll continue our discussion on strategic sourcing and then move maybe on to contract duplication. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Every day, men and women across America try to make the transition from wearing the uniform of our armed services to wearing the varied attire of the private sector or civil service workforce. The Coalition for Government Procurement tries to make that transition easier through its Wounded Veteran Training Program Fund, bringing employers and nonprofit organizations together with one united goal, putting veterans to work. There is no nobler task. Each year, the Coalition presents a golf tournament to bring employers together with organizations dedicated to placing vets in the workforce through cooperative efforts. This year, the Coalition's tournament is August 31st at Whiskey Creek Golf Course. Please consider joining the Coalition, its membership, and others for a fun day of golf, all for a great cause. For more information on playing or sponsoring this worthwhile event, visit thecgp.org or call Roger Waldron at 202-331-0975. That's August 31st at Whiskey Creek Golf Course. See you there.
Being big, thinking small. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. It's not uncommon for overweight or obese people to think of themselves as thinner than they are, even think their weight is normal. But a study indicates those who misperceive their weight may also guess wrong on their cholesterol levels and their waist size. At the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, Mabubur Rahman saw that in national survey data on 6,000 overweight and obese women ages 16 to 49.
Misperceivers are more likely to have abnormal level of total cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, triglyceride, and waist circumference.
Those blood, waist, and weight problems can raise the risk of heart disease. The study, supported by the National Institutes of Health, was presented at a meeting of the American Society of Hypertension. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
With vacation time just around the corner, Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center and switch your existing system at no cost and that great $18.95 rate. And Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at FederalNewsRadio.com.
My family struggled and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know. That this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Bill Gormley, and we have been talking a little bit about everything. We talked some end of fiscal year, and we've talked a little bit strategic sourcing, and let's continue there, Bill. You know, one of the things that I know folks are talk about a lot with regard to strategic sourcing is the impact on small business. You know, do you have any views on that?
Yeah, I think the, you know, my background, you know, I did other contracting, but kind of been labeled with the schedules program, so,
right,
and
right.
Which I don't mind, is the, I think the schedules does a good job in small business, does about 30% participation in their actual dollars going to it for the sales. And I think doing strategic sourcing does a couple of things. One, it's either going to move the dial over to a small business or multiple small business GSAs done, and I think that's great. But I also feel that it's left a lot of small businesses out. So when we say small business, I think I'm pretty much a market advocate, and I think small businesses within their own market are very competitive and have the ability to win from each other and survive. I think having a limited number of small business BPAs has major effect on other small businesses around the country, and I think that has to be taken into consideration.
And well, how would you know? I know one of the things you've thought about or advocated in our last segment was the idea of, you know, each agency doing their BPAs. How would that translate with regard to small businesses?
Well, I think if an agency is going to do, strategic sourcing BPA, I think that they could have, it would give small businesses a greater opportunity to play versus a limited number that's been awarded by GSA. So I think it broadens that opportunity. I think you have to look at the impacts from a socioeconomic standpoint. If the government is getting a fair deal on through the Skittles program, as an example, I then would not be in favor of leveraging a BPA, because there's a lot of agencies, departments have small offices around the country that can be served locally, and I don't think any of that economic value comes into play when they start evaluating the strategic sourcing and combining requirements. I think there's a negative play that they have once they start aggregating too much, Roger, and I think opening it up. So when I said earlier, you know, you said, Bill, what do you think about other ways of doing strategic sourcing? I think, you know, I'm a fan of letting the market drive it, and the market's pretty effective. If the demand's not there, the market's not going to be there. And I think rolling up a BPA and having government-wide kind of has many negative aspects to it. Yes, you can walk away and say we saved X percent, but if you look at the total cost of government, I think that question has not been answered.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Then let's turn to contract duplication a little bit. I know you have some strong views on that as well today. From your perspective, how would you define contract duplication as a first?
Well, I think part of, you know, from a foundation to that question, if you don't mind, where I start from is contract duplication. I think when government has common requirements or similar requirements, and the government has a contract covering those, you know, in this case, the Skittles program is where I'm kind of coming from in regards to your question here. First off, there's only, you know, from an industry standpoint, when you award a company government contracts for the same type of services or products, I think then we start looking into that becomes duplication. And I think there's a cost associated with that that company has had to go through, as well as all the bidders who were not successful. So the duplication starts right there, where I think the government should be looking at.
Well, that's government. That's government and industry. That's duplicative bid and proposal costs right up the front, right off the top, right?
Exactly. So from a government, from an industry cost standpoint, and time and resources, there's duplication of what is already under an earlier contract, as well as to your excellent point, Roger. Within government, you know, we've talked about limited resources or not having a good trained workforce, or you know, people retiring early for the workforce. There's not enough. Contracting officers, 1102s to get the work done now, and then yet we're having folks do put new solicitations out that are in direct competition with contracts that are already awarded that could meet that agency's needs. So there's costs on both sides of this that I think the government has talked about for many, many, many years, and I think it's hopefully, if nothing else, when you go through these budget cuts, hopefully some people will start looking at, hey, what's the preference of contracting, and take that serious for the first time in many years. Some previous administrations felt competition among agencies was healthy. You'd get you know, good deals out of it. You would get good ideas would come from it different ways. And I think it's reached a point where it's just now it's become hasn't become cost effective. I'll put it that way.
Well, you know, with that in mind, and I have to ask you this question, because you've advocated earlier in the show the idea of essentially multiple BPAs, like agency specific BPAs. Isn't that a form of contract duplication?
Well, people could maybe I think we're talking two different areas here: strategic sourcing and contract duplication. First off, the strategic sourcing, we're talking about blanket purchase agreements. So those are BPAs, they're not contracts. And so what we would be doing during those discussions, and I'm glad you brought this up, because a lot of people get this confused. I know you wouldn't, Roger, with your background, but the more as you ask that question, I'm remembering some of the questions I used to get asked about the same thing. BPAs, or blanket purchase agreements, they're made to be, you know, pretty swift buying tools that are leveraged off an existing contract.
Right. And Bill, right there, we'll let you finish your thought when we come back. But right now we have to take a break. We're talking to Bill Gormley, and we're talking about strategic sourcing, contract duplication, end of quarter. Lots of great topics. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. GEICO offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. GEICO, the Government Employees Insurance Company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about GEICO's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Profile America, Tuesday, July 12th. It's the height of the summer vacation season, and across the country, Americans are taking part in their favorite outdoor activities. From hiking and rock climbing to swimming and boating, or just enjoying the scenery. From Alaska to Florida, millions of us will have fun in the many national and local parks and recreation areas in every state in the Union. To highlight this marvelous resource, this is National Parks and Recreation Month. There are almost 80 million acres of national parks and recreation areas and 14 million acres of state facilities. These facilities draw a combined total of just over 1 billion visitors annually. That's about 3 visits each year for every person in the U.S. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Cancer Institute is pioneering the use of secure online transactions to speed up clinical drug trials. The traditional manual process of getting the paperwork to begin a clinical trial completed usually takes 3 to 5 days. By using digital signatures and secure identities, NCI and the Safe Biopharma Association says they're aiming to cut that time down to just a few hours. Besides being faster, they also make the document trail more searchable and auditable.
General Dynamics Information Technology's Silver Eagle team is holding a recruiting event for help and service desk experts with TSSCI clearances to work in the intelligence community. On-site interviews with hiring managers will be held July 14th in Chantilly, Virginia. To register, call the Silver Eagle hotline at 703-268-7406 or email tscareers@gdit.com. General Dynamics Silver Eagle on-site interview July 14th, Chantilly, Virginia. Email tscareers@gdit.com or call 703-268-7406 to register today. The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
As we continue to engage government executives who are changing the way government does business, join us next week on location in New York City with special guest Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York. How is the city modernizing and consolidating operations for the 21st century? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with New York City Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Young, gov, and awesome? Join 500 federal emerging leaders at the only conference created by and for younger feds. The next generation of Government Summit, presented by Young Government Leaders and GovLoop, takes place July 28th and 29th at the JW Marriott. Federal News Radio listeners, save on registration. Use the discount code FEDRADIO to save $55. Visit nextgengovt.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're talking to Bill Gormley, president of the Washington Management Group, now a Dell Tech company. And we've been talking about contract duplication, strategic sourcing, the end of the fiscal year. And Bill, when we took the break, you were about to answer the question as to why BPAs, agency-specific BPAs to meet strategic sourcing needs are not contract duplication. Okay.
All right,
here, go for it.
That's right. You're here with my opportunity. Right?
Yeah.
Our opportunity. Anyway, I think it's important, but the blanket purchase agreements are negotiated off established contracts. So there's not a duplication of contract, and the amount of effort that it takes to do a BPA is far reduced and is less expensive. So you're leveraging an existing contract when you solicit people who are on the schedules program to award them a blanket purchase agreement, Roger. So that does not fall into contract duplication.
Okay. Yes. Excellent answer, Bill. Very good.
Call me out.
Yeah. Well, hey, you got to be consistent, right? So, hey, and another thing I wanted to ask you about is this. I don't know what the right word for it is. Is it amorphous? These sort of ether-like things that float around the air. They're called multi-agency contracts.
Max.
That's right. Yeah. Big Max.
Big Max.
And it seems like, you know, you talk to some folks and there are very few from their perspective. You talk to other folks and you see, you know, in the thousands. What is your sense of it?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be a need for, you know, some need of MAC or multi-agency contracts, Roger. I think part of our earlier discussion on duplication of contracts, that this would fall into that category. You know, MACs are going to be predominantly in, you know, the services and professional services and IT area. And I think those are probably the key areas where they are right now. And I think that since it's in that industry base there, I think it would be easy for the administration to kind of get their arm around. I think there's over 4,000, I think, of MAC contracts out there. And I think, you know, you look at the total cost of administration and what it delivers for the total government, I think it would be time to look at probably throttling back the numbers of MACs out there. Is there a need for them? I'm sure there is, but there also falls into duplication and extra effort on the part of government and industry.
Okay, how would you define a MAC? I mean, my perspective, it's where the contract specifically says that it's available for use by other agencies.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you would normally go ahead and have a MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, or some form of a document set up between what would be the eligible users, and then because those would be the folks that you would use to develop and the requirements before you go out and solicit from
right.
industry.
Okay, yeah, and you know, it seems to me that's an area, too. Well, why use a MAC when you've got the schedules already in place, right?
Exactly.
There, right?
Exactly.
Another thought, and I've heard, you know, some observers of the procurement system say begin to wonder, like, is it time? This is for us old folks, time for to go back to a Brooks Act like model at GSA. And for those of you, for you young folks out there listening, the Brooks Act,
Jack Brooks,
GSA used to have exclusive procurement authority for information technology in the federal government up until 1996 when the Clinger-Cohen Act repealed the Brooks Act and essentially gave each agency its organic authority to buy IT. Agencies no longer had to go to GSA getting a delegation of procurement authority to conduct their IT procurements, like sort of, you know, and they'd have to put together a business case to support their delegation, their request for a delegation, that sort of thing. Do you think, you know, is it time to reconsider that model and look at it again? You know, it's just like everything, right? What goes around comes around, right?
Yeah. I don't know if
pendulum swings.
I don't know if Jack Brooks has the opportunity to come back around again.
No. Okay.
Hey, no. But anyway, I really don't. I mean, I think with the advent of, you know, the internet and so forth since, you know, then the which we just consider, you know, just it's always at our hands. I think having open and transparent ability to communicate kind of does away a lot with some of the requirements of the, you know, the previous Brooks Act, Roger. And I think one of the problems in working within that Brooks Act that I was involved in, there was a pretty significant delay in getting technology needs of government met because of the approval process. And people can talk about, well, we can streamline the approval process, but I can guarantee you that there would be issues still associated with that and people questioning maybe while they didn't get some of their requirements approved and so forth. So the long answer, but really it's a short answer, is no.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the administration has done a really good job with their, you know, IT 25-point IT management plan and the idea of actually doing modular IT contracting. I think that definitely is the way to go, and I think that's provides a framework for to create an overall better management system for the government across its IT procurements. You know, I know you had an opportunity to attend the announcement last Thursday, I think it was, July 7th, I believe, the OMB announcement with regard to goal for 15% savings in management support services. I guess trying to cut from estimated $40 billion in purchases to $34 billion, a $6 billion reduction. You know, what do you think of that goal?
Well, You got to have goals to make progress. So I think what they've done. I have not. It was just last week. I have not studied the 15 PSC codes that they put out. I know the coalition listed them in the Friday Flash. I guess
that's
last
right.
Week.
Yep.
So yeah, but it was for the listeners out there and go to the Friday Flash and they have everything out there. But I think the I think they have the OMB is going to have to be careful that the agencies understand how this is going to get implemented, because I think you can't do a 15% cut by every agency and department. It has going to have to be done from a strategic standpoint. And if I remember right, you can help me here, Roger. I think this was through FY12.
I believe
it was for the
correct.
Next year. So we're talking through through the end of next year. We have about 15 months or so to see this type of reduction. By virtue of a smaller, what I can guarantee is by virtue of a smaller budget, they're part of that 15% is going to be represented.
Right. Yes, yeah.
So that'll be interesting how that's addressed. But anyway, I mean, having a smaller budget is going to get part of that 15%. And I think agencies, as they need to get management support services, that they're going to go out and get it. I think what they're looking for here is says, hey, do you really need certain services to be performed? We want you to go through and do a kind of do a second review of your requirements and see where you can cut back. And this is not, if I remember Dan Gordon, I think it was him, Roger, was pretty clear on this is not a signal of insourcing.
Right. Right. That was very clear.
Okay,
yes.
So this is actually a goal of reducing the government's consumption for management support services. So we'll see. I mean, it's a good goal.
Yeah, I think there's a government, from my experience when I was in government, I think you can confirm, there's like when people say cut 15%, there's a tendency to say, okay, let's just go across the enterprise and cut 15%. I think to make it an effective fundamentally and actually potentially improve mission performance, you have to be strategic about it. Like you can't, there's going to be some opportunities for reductions in certain areas and maybe not in others, just depending on the nature of that agency and the circumstances that agency faces.
Well,
department.
Right. GAO was also in attendance at this July 7th at the White House Conference Center. So GAO is interested in doing some work in this area to measure this goal or this objective. So sometimes that'll spook agencies or departments to make a across the board 15% cut. What that typically does is, people are pretty, people are gonna, water has a funny way of following the path of of least resistance, or if you block it, it'll go another way. So I don't know if this is going to be
Is that water or money?
Yeah, right. And that's right. It could be liquid.
Yeah, right.
So work gets done and it's coded a little differently. And Dan Gordon was very clear that they would keep a watchful eye on that. And I think we all understand that. But that's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to uncover that. So we'll keep our eye on it and see how we do 15 months from now.
Right. And I've had to keep a watchful eye on the clock. We could talk for another hour, Bill. But we've reached the end of the show. So I want to thank Bill Gormley, president of the Washington Management Group, a Delta company, for joining me today. I'm Roger Waldron. And Bill, again, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Roger. Look forward to next time. Thank you.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.